Hi there, and welcome to the E-commerce Marketing 101 podcast brought to you by Dash, the visual content management tool for D2C businesses. In this podcast, we'll be chatting with marketers and creatives just like you. We'll cover the campaigns and design methods they've used to grow their D2C brand so you can grow yours. I'm your host, Barney. Let's kick off today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the E-commerce Marketing 101 podcast. For this episode, and actually the last one in the series, we're joined by Rhiannon Johns, the head of brand for luxury homeware company Piglet in Bed. Piglet in Bed were founded in 2017 and quickly made a name for themselves for their linen bedding. They've since expanded to new product ranges, opened their first brick and mortar store with more set to come, and have lit up TikTok with their perfectly executed cozy cottagecore content. As head of brand, Rhiannon has played a key role in the company's direction, and I'm looking forward to chatting with her to find out more. Rhiannon, it's a pleasure to have you with us. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. How are you doing today?
Good. Yeah, it's Thursday, so weekend is pending soon.
Yeah, it's in sight. We got this.
Yeah.
Well, let's pretend I've never heard of Piglet in Bed before. What do you guys do, and what sets you apart from the competition?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I guess you kind of touched on it a bit there in the intro. So we're a British bedding, lifestyle and homeware brand. We were founded by Jessica Hanley in 2017. And the way that it came about was Jessica essentially felt in the homeware market, there weren't many brands that were really kind of resonating with her and her friends and people in her life and how they were actually using their homes. And so in the lead up to that, I think with the rise of social media, suddenly you were seeing this much more authentic insight into how people actually lived. And she kind of set about looking for a material that would really lend itself to that aesthetic. And she wanted it to be a natural material that was also sustainable. And linen is one of the most sustainable materials on the market. 7 years on, the collection has expanded. We've got over 30, maybe even 40 different linen colors. We've got cotton bedding. We've got various homewares, so like woolen blankets, curtains, and then sleepwear as well. So linen sleepwear, which is obviously really exciting. And yeah, like you mentioned, with the launch of the stores, that's obviously a kind of massive opportunity for us.
Yeah, that sounds like a really exciting company to be part of and be head of brand for, which leads me to my next question. In a nutshell, like head of brand for Piglet in Bed, what does that look like for you day to day?
Yeah, I guess it's head of brand marketing in some sense, because I lead on all the email marketing, all of our organic social, our PR. So whether that's managing agencies or doing it in-house, we do a bit of both. Any visual content, written content, working with influencers, commissioning content creators, photo shoots. And then I guess at the top of that, working very closely with Jess, who is very involved in the brand side of things, to make sure that everything that we're doing stays on brand, whether that's collections that we launch or partnerships we work on or new partners that we onboard, whatever it is, just making sure that it all feels cohesive and that we kind of stay true to our central ethos and values.
Yeah, nice. Well, I've been following you guys for a while now, and one thing I really admire is how put together your brand feels, like you have such a distinct brand. And I really wanted to hear in your own words, like, how would you describe the ethos of the brand for Piglet in Bed?
Yeah, it's funny. I feel like there are definitely a few different strands to it. It's almost like a person, I guess. Like, you can have different parts of your personality, but they should all sit quite naturally together. And also, people can see different elements, but it all amounts to this one brand and one kind of feeling that you get when you see the brand on whatever it is, social media. And so I would say those different elements are, we're definitely quite playful. And I think that sets us apart from some of our competitors. I think especially in the sleep space, it's quite common for brands to take on this quite calming and almost sleepy kind of tone of voice. And we don't really do that. We're quite bold. We're quite cheeky. And I think that comes back to our roots. And when Jessica named the brand Piglet in Bed, like, piglets are young and cheeky and playful and quite scruffy. So we're quite authentic in that way, and that what you see is what you get. And the tone of voice that we use on social media is sometimes like a bit cheeky, and we might post a kind of funny meme or that you might not expect from some of our other competitors, I guess. Some of the other things, I mean, comfort is a huge part of brand, and that's obviously relating to our products, but also, again, our tone of voice, but also the kind of content that we put out into the world and the community we're a part of. It's a very safe community, and also we create or commission content that people feel is quite comforting to watch, whether that's like morning routines or daily routines or a nice baking recipe. People wouldn't even have to be our customers to have invested in that side of us and for them to kind of think of us in that way. And then I guess it's that rural aesthetic, coming back to that lived-in look, quite rustic, the look of linen. So linen kind of has these natural crinkles. That's why there's kind of no point of ironing it, because it looks beautiful the way it is. And you kind of have to embrace that. And that's that countryside aesthetic. And that's obviously super important to us and nature. We take a lot of inspiration from, whether it's all of our colors are kind of inspired by nature in some way, and or they're all named after something in nature. Yeah. So I feel like they're the most common.
Yeah. Well, what you're saying about the countryside is super cool, because it links again back to what you're saying about the founding and like just founding it in a garden shed, which I did want to talk a little bit about. So I'm sure one thing you'll have heard a lot as a brand marketer is maybe some founders, they don't necessarily understand the importance of having a coherent brand for DTC companies. Sounds like Jess is super involved in that. So that must be quite a nice relationship in that you don't necessarily have to justify the importance of brand marketing. But for marketers who are maybe in that position where they have to articulate why investing in a brand is important, what would you say? Like, what would the case be that you would lay out?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think it's more important than ever. I think with the amount of advertising, especially paid digital advertising, I think you could get so far without having a kind of strong brand presence. You know, people could see a really nice product, click through. If they're really sold, they see some good reviews. It's a decent price point. The website's set up well. They might make the purchase, and that's great. But there's not going to be that kind of brand loyalty there. Like, what else is there to give them, or what else is there to make them come back, or what else is there to make them think, oh, actually, I want to follow them on social media. I might never buy from them again, or I might buy from them in 4 years when I want a duvet set again, but I want to keep up with them because they kind of feel like a friend, almost like someone who's in their community. So yeah, I think it's super important for that, making people think of you when you're not right in front of them. I think especially with what we do, that bedding, it's not fashion, it's quite a considered purchase. So, you know, not everyone is always in the position to want to buy a new bedding set. They might move in 2 years' time. So yeah, they need to always have that in mind when it does come to that point.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes complete sense. And I read an interesting article, I think it was last year, about like a case for brand marketing, in that like it's a channel in its own right, but it's also adding compound interest to everything else that you're doing. Is that something that you would subscribe to?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's also just super important, I think, to keep you on the straight and narrow. Like, if you've not got that to fall back on, like when you're making decisions, what's the barometer for deciding if something is worth doing? Because it's asking yourself, like, again, as if you're a person, when you're making decisions, like, actually, what are my values? Like, is this a good decision for me? It's the exact same for a brand. You have to think, is this a right decision for the brand? And that does fall on me, but you also want everyone in the company to be totally invested and to have bought into that, and to also know, so that when they're making their individual decisions, that they can make the right ones, and also just be proud to work for the company as well, because you'd hope that the reason they're working there is because it resonates with them as well. I personally would find it really hard to work for a brand that didn't make me tick or I didn't share the same values with.
Yeah, you want to believe in the work you're doing.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Well, what mistakes do you commonly see other brands making in the development of their brand identity? Is there like common pitfalls that you would advise to watch out for?
I think just not thinking about it early on, kind of letting your product lead the way and the brand following after, I think is a huge mistake. I think you really want to distinguish what brand you're creating, and the product should flow from there. It might happen side by side, and at that point, you might tweak things because you've found a certain product that actually you really want to explore. But I think from that point, as you're kind of evolving, you really want to have that brand in place so that all those decisions kind of refer back to it instead of being like, oh, actually, I want to try this now, and not thinking, well, does this sit with the brand? Because then all of a sudden you're selling everything and you really have no identity. So yeah, I'd say that's definitely one that I can think of. Maybe not being confident enough with it. Kind of like what I just said, those different strands of the brand, you might come up with one element of it, but not thinking, right, but what are all the values that drip down from there? Because that could really help when you're making decisions further down the line. And then also, I think we've definitely found that we have evolved with the brand over the last few years. I think some elements should stay as they are. I think things like your mission, your values, if they're changing, then yeah, like I said, that's probably not a good thing. But whether it's your brand color palette, or if you're finding your tone of voice has actually changed a little bit, I think don't be afraid to think, actually, this isn't quite working for us anymore. We've definitely had that a few times, and it's always felt better when we've been like, actually, I'm not sure that really sits with us quite well anymore, and really take the time to take a step back and work out what actually could we tweak here and there. So not being afraid to do that a bit further down the line if it doesn't feel that you've kind of thrown with it and you've gone in two different directions.
Yeah. Is that something that you revisit periodically, or is it more just as and when those kind of conversations come up? Like, do you have a brand audit, or is it happens more organically?
I'd say it's definitely more organically. We worked with a branding agency probably about 3 years ago as we were growing quite quickly. So that was a really good opportunity to take a step back and almost just put everything in writing, like what was already there. It's not like any changed at that point, but to actually create this kind of brand book that we could then refer back to, because we didn't really have it up until that point. It was all in Jess's head, and she felt super clear about what the brand was and where she wanted it to go. But as you're bringing in more people, making sure there's that reference point that you can say, look, this is what we are. But yeah, from there, I think it's been a bit more organic. As I mentioned, if someone's finding that something's not quite sitting right, just flagging that. And it could even be flagging it, and then you sit down as someone explains, actually, no, it does make sense, and this is a reason. It's almost like reminders of why it is right. I think it can be easy, you know, when you're in the weeds and in the day-to-day, to not constantly be thinking about that big overarching message and your values and everything. So sometimes it is a case of just like reminding yourself, or someone else reminding you.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of related to what I wanted to ask next, which was, how would you recommend other marketers do this in creating a brand that both allows the business to grow like Piglet and Bed have, whilst also it not going too far the other way and it being super restrictive? Like, you're allowing enough room for growth and evolution whilst still maintaining that coherency.
Yeah, I guess making sure your values or your mission aren't quite singly focused. And I guess that goes back to what I was saying, that having those different elements of your personality and your brand that could then mean it's not just one focus, that you then can open it up to whatever it is, new products or something in the future. So if we had started off saying we're a sleep brand, for example, we would have been very limited in the future to purely working with, you know, sleep related products. But Jess kind of left that quite open for us to evolve with it and introduce new collections down the line.
Nice. Yeah. Looking forward as well with 2024, you mentioned when we first spoke that you're opening more retail stores and the brand is growing a lot. Do you worry about potentially losing the control of the brand integrity? And what processes have you put in place to make sure that that doesn't happen?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not too worried. And I think that's because we have such a great team in place. And I think having Jess, the founder, so involved with that brand side of things, I don't think it would ever get to that place. But I can imagine if you didn't have a founder who was putting the brand front and center, that could easily happen. And suddenly everything becomes about targets and profits and being in every town. So I think having someone in place at the top alongside me as well, of course, making sure that everyone is referring back to that. You know, in the design of our stores, for example, Jess is super involved. We've got a design agency who also totally get the brand. They totally get what we're going for with the stores. It's not about just opening loads of stores. Like I said, it's about doing it the right way and what feels right for us. So all the stores have a very Piglet in Bed aesthetic. They're all in beautiful old buildings and they're all designed to feel almost like a kind of local greengrocer's or your local deli, quite independent, very tactile materials, not just like mass produced furniture. We source a lot of vintage furniture, for example. We have big wooden tables. So it's really meant to feel like someone is stepping off the street and into your home or into their home. It's, you know, meant to be very welcoming. So I think that's just the key thing, is making sure that you're not trying to grow at the cost of the brand or trying new things just because it's something you'd like to trial. I guess it really is the brand. It's just one of the most important things, to be honest.
Yeah. And it sounds very much like you are all on the same page as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's nice that it is such a lovely brand as well. I think it's very easy to find people who have bought into it. It's definitely not a hard sell.
Yeah, I can imagine. Okay, wonderful. Well, switching gears a little bit, I wanted to talk about TikToks. You guys have popped up on my FYP page a lot. And again, going back to how you're describing your aesthetic, it really comes through in your TikTok content as well. So when did the brand first decide to join the platform and why?
Yeah, so I started in the summer of 2021. I'd been with the brand on the agency side. So I was working at PR agencies and started working with the brand when Jess bought an agency in 2017. So we worked together closely for 2 years. And then I came in-house in 2021. And in the run-up to that, obviously, was COVID. And 2020 was like the golden year of TikTok, basically, where everyone had more time on their hands, you know, all stuck at home. Loads of creators came through on the platform that were producing really good content that was quite entertaining. And so I, at that point, was just loving the platform, basically. And I'd spotted a few creators who I'd started following who were doing these really lovely, whether it was a morning routine or their daily vlog. And it was just to music. They weren't narrating it. It was just really beautifully shot. They'd edited it to really nice music. It felt so calming. And it was so, I think, nice at that time when none of us had a routine to kind of watch other people just do really simple things like making their morning coffee and whatever it was, like walk into their local park. And it was at that time that I was like, oh my gosh, you know what brand would do so well on TikTok? I was like, Piglet. And I honestly think it sparked me then contacting Jess. So I always knew, I said to her on like our first call, I was like, Piglet should get on TikTok. I really think it's a good opportunity. Eventually, when I did start, set up the account in October 2021 and just started off by posting anything and everything, really, just to kind of get an idea of what was going to resonate. Definitely, I was posting stuff then I would never post now that we actually have an understanding of what works and who our community is.
That makes me want to scroll back.
Yeah, I know. It was a safer place back then because there were less people on the platform and obviously we had less followers. But I'd seen a few brands that caught my interest when I was just kind of using the platform, who didn't even have a logo as their profile picture. It was a homeware brand in particular. And I saw this piece of furniture and I went to the comments to find out where it was from, thinking that they were an influencer. And then I'd seen other comments from people saying, where's that from? And they'd said, oh, it's actually ours. And I was like, oh, that's so clever. Like, they're just being any other creator on the platform. And so I knew ever since I started that that's what we were going to do, is just post as if we were part of our community and posting things they'd post, and also not being super pluggy with our product, but just creating nice content that drew people in, because people don't want to be advertised lots to on TikTok. It's very much an entertainment platform. So they want to either be educated or entertained. And so it's not about super flashy pushing your product. And so anything we were posting was super gentle in the way that we were advertising to people, really. So yeah, some of our most viral videos are just, the first one was making my guest room cozy for my best friend's first visit. And we worked with a content creator. I hadn't even thought of the hook before we commissioned it, but she created this lovely video where she was just doing these really sweet touches to her guest room. And obviously the bedding happened to be a part of that, but it wasn't a big part of it really, but it looked lovely. And then I came up with a hook, kind of not really thinking about it that much, like not thinking about trying to be successful with it. And all of a sudden, it just, loads of people were sharing it or they were tagging their friends because it had those points in the hook that would resonate with people. So people were tagging, saying, this is going to be you when I have my first house. And loads of people started doing that. And then people started saying, where's your duvet cover from? And then obviously that gave me the chance to go, oh, it's actually ours. We're a British brand, which was super cool. And it went up to like 2 million views, which at that time was amazing for us. We only had like probably 8,000 followers at that time. And it shot up by about 10,000 followers from that one video. So yeah, we're suddenly at 20K. And once I had that formula, I guess, and we built a community around us as well, it became super easy to know what to post, really. So yeah, it's definitely shifted a lot in the last year. I think as our awareness has grown on the platform, which is amazing, especially in the US, for example, it's obviously harder to do those kind of videos because people have heard of us. So it's a bit harder to do. So we are a bit more product focused nowadays just because, yeah, people do know of us, but it's definitely an interesting one.
That must have felt amazing, that first viral video. Like,
it did.
Such a vindication, I imagine.
Yeah, it was so cool. It was so cool. It was so unexpected. And it's always the way, any video that has done well is the one that I've not thought much of. Whereas all the ones I try really hard on just go nowhere because you over engineer it and you're trying too hard. But it almost just has to come from that really natural place of like, I probably thought of that book in about 10 seconds. Like, oh, that sounds nice. Like not thinking, oh, this will lead to shares or this will lead to comments. Whereas it's harder now because I'm aware of what works, that I'm trying harder to think of things that are going to resonate. But you really just have to put yourself in your customers' or your community's shoes and what it is that they're doing in their lives or they're talking about to make it a bit more natural.
Well, this year then, can you give us a little sneak peek of what your 2024 strategy for TikTok is going to be? You said you're leaning more into the product content.
Yeah. So we've found in the last year, our collection drops have started to do really well. So we have really beautiful imagery every time we launch a collection. And so actually something like an image carousel using the photography from the new collection, which is so anti what would work on TikTok 2 years ago. It's like professional photography. You know, you didn't have carousels at that point. They're the ones that are actually doing really well and driving people to the website as well and getting people kind of excited and getting people to anticipate future collections from us, which is really nice. But yeah, it's also a year of figuring out what the future on TikTok looks like for us, I guess, and kind of moving with the platform and taking a step back and reconfiguring a little bit, which is interesting. Like I said, it's changed. There's a lot more advertising on the platform now that you have to keep up with as a brand on TikTok. So yeah, it's definitely a changing one. I definitely think of a few years ago as the glory years. As a safe space.
No longer.
Yeah, exactly. But it's nice that there are more people on the platform now, for sure. There's more interiors influencers and creators who we can partner with. So that's definitely a nice change. I think it's just figuring out the next stage and what that looks like for us. But I think, to be honest, the thing I always stick to is just being on the platform, absorbing the kind of content that your community are putting out there, the kind of sounds that they're using. Like, TikTok is so fast moving that you've got to be on it every day, to be honest, like if you're going to keep up, because trends come and go in terms of music trends or something they're talking about, that if you're not there at that moment, if you've got to wait for a round of approvals. I think that was definitely worked in our favor as well, that Jess totally trusted me with our content plan. And to be honest, it was me just like working out 5 minutes before uploading what to post instead of this super pre-planned content plan. I'm sure people do that, but I know I'd find it quite hard, to be honest, because so fast moving. But yeah, I think just making sure you're on the platform and being part of the community that your brand is a part of is the most important thing.
What does that content plan look like for you in terms of the amount of content that you know that you need being produced, and how far ahead do you plan it?
To be honest, yeah. That far ahead. So if it's me creating something, then obviously it's something I can just do at home, using my bed. Obviously, I just order the products and then create a video and then find a nice audio. We work with content creators as well. So have some ongoing content creators that we can partner with. I guess if it's something, so say it's around a new product, or say that we felt like there's a gap in something that we haven't spoken about much, then that would probably be a bit further ahead of time. I go to all of our photo shoots and capture loads of content there, which obviously gives us stuff that we can then drip feed and use when the time is right, instead of just using it all in one go. Because it might be that something is going to work better with an audio a few months down the line. So it's good to have this kind of bank of content, I'd say, that you can lean back on.
How do you plan that all out? Like, is that on a Trello? How do you keep track of all of the different bits that you've going on and when to post it?
It's kind of in my head. Yeah, no, our Instagram content plan is much better. That's definitely more planned out. And Bryony on my team creates that a week ahead of time. I mean, which isn't even that far. I know people do like monthly content plans, but we find that it just works better for us in terms of when a product's going to be available or when there's a funny meme going around. I think being agile and having that room to be flexible is really helpful. But yeah, TikTok is definitely something that we will get better at pre-planning.
Well, it sounds like in some ways, like what you were just saying, it suits more of the nature of the platform in that you do have that flexibility to jump on a trend or a meme.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I guess it's we have a mix. So some of the stuff is me jumping on stuff and then some of it is commissioning content creators a few weeks in advance or a month in advance to create something that is going to take a bit longer, that is around a seasonal moment like Christmas or whatever it is, Valentine's Day. So I guess you kind of want those two strands. You kind of want them both happening at the same time.
That makes sense. Well, you mentioned content creators. And it's funny you said that they're getting the guest bedroom ready for my best friend, because I think that's also appeared on mine. How do you find those content creators and how do you manage those relationships?
So a girl called Alana, who's amazing, I found her on TikTok. She was just a customer and she posted this really nice video that featured our bedding. I think it was like shots around her home. And I kind of was like, oh, she's really good at making content. And obviously, you don't want it to be in the same home all the time. Don't want it to be constantly my bedroom. So it's nice to have different aesthetics or different spaces that is going to inspire different people. So yeah, just got in touch with her and become really close over the last few years. And we really collaborate on ideas. If she spots something, she'll send me a link, or if I spot something, and we'll work out together the hook or what product's going to feature. And then other content creators, yeah, I guess it's more a case of us just seeing people who are making really nice content on the platform. We do get approached by a lot of people, UGC creators now, but yeah, we really just do it in-house. We just kind of search ourselves because it is a kind of particular aesthetic that we're going for. We obviously want to make sure that it feels on brand, but yeah, we've never really had any trouble finding people. I think also in the last few years, there's so many new creators popping up, which is really nice and exciting.
You mentioned about your audience. There's quite a lot of them in the US. Are there plans to work more with US content creators too, or are you remaining working with UK ones?
Yeah, we have worked with a few US content creators. Yeah, it's definitely something we're exploring. We work, I'd say, with the same amount of influencers in both the UK and the US on partnerships. So yeah, it's definitely an opportunity there. But yeah, we find it's not an absolute must, I guess, because our Britishness and our aesthetic is what resonates with our American audience. You know, our collections, they really remind you of kind of an English country house or country cottage. And I think that's what people in the US really love about our products and our brand.
Perfect. Well, what challenges have you had to overcome when working with content creators?
I think just making sure that the brief is super clear. You know, sometimes it's easy to not put my thoughts down onto paper if you're stuck for time and you're like, yeah, they've got it, whatever. But actually, they're not a mind reader. They don't know exactly what I'm thinking. So it might be that they style in a slightly different way to what we would go for. So yeah, we've kind of built out quite a detailed creative brief now with examples of what works for us and examples of what doesn't work for us, which I think is really important. I feel quite lucky. We've not had huge challenges, to be honest, other than that. But yeah, I feel like that's something we could kind of learn over the last few years and improved upon.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, that creative brief, I think, would be really interesting for listeners. So you said about the types of content that you want to see and the types that you don't. What else would you say makes a really good, tight content creative brief?
Yeah, having all of your deliverables listed in there, all the small details. I guess I treat it quite like a photo shoot now. So include the kind of lighting that is going to work best for you. Include any props that wouldn't quite be right, or pieces in their home that wouldn't quite be right for your aesthetic. The length of the video, whether you want it produced on an external platform or in TikTok itself. mood board shots, and then just examples, I guess, of styling and any formats that don't quite resonate with your audience, I guess.
Perfect. Thank you. Okay. Well, I think that's almost it for my questions. I wanted to ask you first before we go, are there any other brands in the D2C space that you go to for inspiration or that you think are doing particularly well with their own brand marketing?
Yeah. I mean, a brand I'm obsessed with from a brand side of things, and I don't think it's news to say it at all because I think that a lot of people think this, but is Patagonia. I think they are such a shining example of having such a clear brand that they stick to till the end. Like, their values are so clear and everything they do is just such a shining example, I think, of the content they create. Like, they produce such beautiful videos that have nothing to do with their products, but it's whether it's giving back to a community or whatever it is. I think they're a kind of shining example, I think, of just always sticking to your values and not veering far from them. Other brands, I think Outdoor Voices are really lovely. We've looked to them for inspiration before, and they've got a really lovely website where their tone of voice and personality is super clear, kind of who they are. It's beautifully designed. They've got that one brand color, a lovely blue that you think of when you think of the brand. We went through that process of, like I mentioned earlier, if something wasn't sitting quite right, we realized that we had some set brand colors, but we didn't have one color that really stood for us. And actually, if you think about it, all of the brands that come to mind, like Dossier, for example, Outdoor Voices, they all have that one color that you think of. And I think it's powerful. So yeah, we went through a process being like, what is our brand color? And we realized that this peach color that was part of our palette, and we were using it on Instagram quite a lot, it really resonated with us, if kind of the color of a piglet as well, which obviously helps. But for me, it just perfectly evoked who we were. It wasn't a pink, it was like this peach that felt slightly cheeky. And so that was a really nice moment of being like, yes, we're really sure. And we all totally agree. It wasn't like someone's like, no, I don't like that color. Like, it felt very natural. And that felt like we were kind of growing up and being super confident about who we were. Peach is quite a kind of daring color as well, like not everybody's comfortable wearing it. So I quite liked that we were like, yeah, we don't care.
That's yeah, our nice color. Perfect. Okay. Well, thank you very much. So that's the end of the podcast. It's genuinely been a pleasure. You're also officially closing out the first season of the podcast. So thank you for doing that. And I really enjoyed talking with you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's been awesome.
Anytime. And for those listening at home, thanks for joining us and all the best.
Thank you so much for listening to E-commerce Marketing 101, How to Grow Your D2C Brand. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe to the series for actual tips you can use in your own e-commerce marketing. This podcast series is brought to you by Dash. If you need to get your visuals in front of potential customers faster, or you're sick of spending too much time sending assets to your retail partners, then we might have just what you've been looking for. Take a leaf from leading e-commerce brands like Passenger Clothing and check out Dash.app. Just go to Dash.app to take out a free trial and try it for yourself.